Actually, let me just, I'm looking at the power on my computer. Probably plug him in. Hold on.
Good idea.
He broke it.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
And that should be enough show for you. Look, you
That's
get
it.
This for free.
5 seconds.
Yeah.
It's over.
Oh, no, I don't mean in terms of length. I mean is in terms of volume of people that would be on the podcast.
I thought we were just stopping it there.
No, I'm just saying these people are getting this for free.
Quit while we're ahead.
Yep. That has never been our motto. But we are bumping the show up. We're taking it up an infinite amount of notches now. Let me tell you what this guy has done. I got to take a deep breath because this guy's done a lot.
Okay.
Rapid Fire Improv, one of the best improv companies in the world in Edmonton. He's part of this. He's been part of this for forever.
Great.
You like your video games. This guy plays Commander Shepard, unless you play it as a lady, in which case he is not Commander Shepard.
Oh.
He is on TV. He's got a show coming up on Super Channel. It's called Tiny Plastic Men. May contain nuts. You might watch him on that already. He's on the Irrelevant Show on CBC Radio. He is so much more of a better person than we are. Pleased to have him here. Mark Meer, there you are.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And thank you for recognizing that I am a much better person.
Yeah. We only try to bring on people who are better than us.
That's right. Oh,
I'm only interviewed by my lessers.
Yeah. The whole point of this show is to take us down a peg.
Fortunately, due to our low self-esteem, we have quite a few guests on our list.
I understand.
A lot of potential.
So you're quite busy right now. You're the newest thing is this Super Channel show, which is coming out now. Now what is this? I thought is it sketch? Is it it looks to be animation? It looks to be everything. What's up with this thing?
Well, I guess in its basic form, it's a hybrid of sitcom and sketch comedy, and we've essentially replaced the B plot that you would find in most sort of textbook sitcoms with sketches, and sketches that come out of the A plot of the sitcom, and part of those are animated by Mr. Riley Beach, who does a cartoon called Spicy Back Pain. And he has a website, spicybackpain.com, where you can see some of his own stuff and some of the stuff he's created for the show.
Now,
you have to have Super Channel to see the stuff he's created for the show.
Absolutely. Now Super Channel, we're thrilled to find out, still exists.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
That was the first place I remember being able to see nudity on the TV when I was a young man.
Oh.
Yes, I think we're not too far apart in age, so I certainly remember watching a lot of Super Channel. I had a large collection of VHS tapes that I'd, horror movies off Super Channel on.
Yeah.
I remember babysitting, and the people who were babysit had Super Channel, so I was able to watch the SCTV, like there was some sort of like a larger version of SCTV that you could watch, like 90 minutes of SCTV, but you could only see it on Super Channel, and then afterwards was Naked Ladies, and it was like, this is the channel for me. Like, they paid me to babysit, but that was, I should have paid them, frankly.
So, Super Channel, you had to pay extra for it, right?
Back in the day, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Subscribe to it.
Yeah. That's why I never saw it, because my parents were like, basic cable all the way. Like, if you had to pay for another channel, there's just absolutely no way at all I would ever get that channel.
But now that you've heard that Tiny Plastic Men is on Super Channel.
Now that I know that it's on Super Channel, I will be subscribing. I'll be adding that to my already voluminous digital package.
Yes, I myself actually thought I didn't get Super Channel, and then I realized that I did, because I'd had a real hankering to watch Game of Thrones as it came out, so I think it came with HBO for me.
Oh, nice one.
Yes.
Yeah, we do not get that, but I do want to legally watch your show. I will find a way. I'll do some more babysitting, frankly. I know the child has grown up, gone to college, probably has children of their own, but I'll find some way of watching it.
Yeah, those people probably still have Super Channel, so go to their house.
You can watch it on the Canadian equivalent streaming channel, which is Igloo.
I think it is a Canadian channel, Super Channel. It is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, you have another sketch show that's still on the air, I believe, and that's May Contain Nuts. That's still, yes. Is that still being done, or is that wrapped?
That's Caution May Contain Nuts. I mean, the stuff that you're seeing is stuff that we all shot already. Mm-hmm. That was our three seasons on APTN. But stuff is always going up on the web. There's like lots of new stuff and stuff that, sketches that we shot, but we shot too much, frankly. And so it didn't actually air. So you can find us at nutsonline.tv.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
And I believe Caution May Contain Nuts is also screening on Bite TV.
That's right. That's where I've seen it lately. Yeah.
Yes.
Every so often I'm flipping around and it's like, oh, look at that. Look who's still on the TV. Good on you.
Yeah, I think we were exclusive with APTN. They, of course, had got to air it first because they were the ones who put up the money. But I think, yeah, it's season three. I'm not sure if season three started airing on Bite yet, but it should in short order.
And as someone who's not, like, I used to have a sketch show on the TV, and we all had to share about three wigs. And watching your show, it's just so nice to see some nice makeup on there, some nice costumes on that one. I'm talking about the Caution May Contain Nuts. Like, did you bring your own outfits and stuff when you were playing characters on there?
In my case, yes. And I provided a bunch of other people too, because, you know, for things like superhero sketches and zombie sketches and things like that, I had a fairly deep wardrobe of costumes and Halloween stuff. But we also had fantastic makeup and wardrobe departments on Caution May Contain Nuts, award-winning, as a matter of fact.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Where did you get the costumes from?
Mostly, I think it was besides the stuff that they borrowed from me,
That's what I mean. Where did you get your costumes from?
Oh, I just have a huge collection of, well, I have a collection of a lot of things, action figures, supervillain costumes and things like that. So, obviously a lot of the stuff that I have, we couldn't use because it was, you know, licensed. It was actual, say, characters that are owned by now Disney or Warner Brothers. So because, you know, Marvel is of course a Disney company now, and yeah. DC is owned by Warner Brothers. But we were able to mix and match and things like that, and created our own supervillain, Dr. Von Chaos, who actually he's gone over into Tiny Plastic Men. He appears in.
Oh, good. He's one of my favorite characters. I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah. So I still own him. So I brought him over to Tiny Plastic Men, and he's essentially a bargain basement Dr. Doom.
Isn't APTN, isn't that the Aboriginal People's Television Network?
Yes, it is.
How did you end up on that channel?
Well, I actually joined the show in the second season.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about Nuts here, of course. Basically, APTN had put money into the show after one of the members of Caution May Contain Nuts, Sheldon Elter, was on Canadian Idol. And Sheldon is native, and he went fairly far. I can't remember how far he got. It wasn't quite in the top 10, but close to it. And Sheldon had a comedy troupe called Blacklisted, and I was friends with all of those guys. Dana Anderson, Second City alumni, longtime director of Dynasty, past member of Dynasty, he was in that troupe. And so they did their first season, and I auditioned for the second season. They cast me, and so I wrote a bunch of stuff for it. So basically, it was because of Sheldon, and of course, Howie Miller, who's one of Canada's best known native stand-ups. They sort of built the show around them.
Okay. Okay. So for your audition, did they look in your, just look at your closet of costumes? Is that the way you auditioned for the show?
No, there's some improv involved, some writing.
In your closet of costumes.
Well, the thing is that I knew stuff I had, so I was able to write sketches that incorporated that stuff. And then they'd say, well, there's no way we can do this. This calls for a 3-foot-tall paper mache skull. And I was like, I have one of those. It's okay.
it's great to see someone who is there's a couple of kinds of nerds, and there's the joyful nerd and there is the angry nerd. And you've always been I've known you for many years. You've always been the joyful nerd who really seems to enjoy it. And you know, to bring just, you're the good kind of nerd is what I'm saying. And it's
thank you.
Yeah.
It's, I try to be.
Well, that's one way you're better than us.
That's true. But it's so nice
to
see.
Angry nerds?
We're both angry. I'm more dyspeptic.
I understand. I'm more bucolic. Matic? No, I'm not playing. But yeah, I do try to, as you say, be a joyful nerd, because, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of angry nerds out there.
And you've brought, but you've then taken that and you have grown those seeds, you know, into some really good shows, like your improv shows where you're doing the full superhero costumes are outstanding. That's just brilliant. That's the kind of thing that I've heard so many people talk about, like, hey, we should do that. And then, of course, nothing ever happens. And it's nice to see that. Other example of something I like that you do is you cosplay as your character, you know, from Mass Effect, which is just a fantastic thing to do. It's just like something that people normally wouldn't do. They'd just like rest on their laurels. They'd sit behind a table. They'd sign an autograph, you know, and they'd go to the snack room and they'd have their cup of pudding. But no, you're out there and you really seem to be enjoying to the full the things you have achieved. And it's great to see that.
Well, make no mistake, I get my share of free pudding.
That's right. He's painted such a picture of the green room. I mean, I'm a little jealous now. Of
just smack it out of Stanley's hand.
Yeah.
All these.
In the case of the Commander Shepard costume, yeah, I mean, there was no way I couldn't do that, especially when a friend of mine, David Carpenter, who I'd met at Dragon Con years prior, he basically offered to make me a set of Commander Shepard armor. Mm-hmm. So I went, I'll wear it.
Yes.
And I of course, had been to Dragon Con a few times, and I had this huge storehouse of stuff that I made for Halloween or friends had made for me. So I was mostly cosplaying supervillains down there. Dr. Doom, for example. I do have a Dr. Doom costume, even though I wasn't able to use it for Caution Me Contain Nuts.
Probably my favorite costume that you've got is the Super Adaptoid one.
That's a more recent one. Yeah, that was made by my friends Laban Boldero and Brian Parsley.
Are you familiar with Super Adaptoid, Dave?
No, I'm sorry.
Here's what he does. He adapts to things.
I'm the audience, so you can explain to me. And to
he adapts to things. So if something comes on, he's like, oh, we can't go see this movie. We got to see this one. Yeah. He adapts to it, and he goes like, yeah, I'll go see a romantic comedy. He's fine with it. He rolls with the punches.
That's a good power.
He also has a Thor hammer.
Does he use it to adapt things?
No, it's a result of adapting Thor. He basically copies other people's powers.
Okay.
He looks like a mishmash of everybody that he copies.
Yeah, about every 5 years, Marvel Comics comes up with a character whose power is they absorb other people's powers.
Yeah.
And they go, don't we already have Mimic and Rogue and Super Adaptoid? No, I'm gonna just... And then they have that, and it goes...
Exactly. Yeah. He's one of the first, though. I mean, I think he was actually created by, or drawn first by Jack Kirby.
Hmm. I'm going to put him up against Mimic. I think Mimic might... Mimic, boy.
I know, they came out at the same time, and at one point they did actually, in early X-Men issues, they actually, Mimic and the Super Adaptoid fought, and their powers canceled each other out, and Mimic ended up in a coma.
Well, I like that a lot. You've out-nerded me, sir. Bless your heart. That is fantastic.
And he's a happy nerd.
He's a happy nerd. No, that is a real thing. Whenever I go to cons, you see the creators and the people involved in things, and there's some of them that are just bitter. And you're like, what are you being bitter about? I understand you have off days and you have on days, and but some that seem consistently like they got the wrong end of the stick and they got screwed around. And then there's people like Mark, another person, someone like a Len Wein. You see that guy, and you could see maybe he'd be a little, maybe I should have some of that Wolverine money. He doesn't have the Wolverine money, but he's always happy. He's having a good time. He's goofing around. He's wearing the Wolverine shirts, and it's just like it just makes shit better.
Yeah,
You can go one way or the other, and it's nice seeing people go in the positive.
Mark's
way.
Young. He has plenty of years to get screwed over and bitter. Lots of time yet.
Oh, yeah. That's all ahead of me.
So what did you start with? Did you start doing sketch, or was it improv, or what was the start of your comedy the genesis?
Well, unlike a lot of people, I didn't do any improv in high school. In fact, I didn't even take drama in high school because I went to school in a small town and it wasn't actually available. I had to take art by correspondence. And when I moved to Edmonton, I'd always been interested in sketch comedy, though. I'd loved, SCTV, obviously, Monty Python, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And I auditioned for this thing called the Teen Festival of the Arts, which used to be held by the Citadel Theater. And that year, Three Dead Trolls and a Baggie, who was a prominent Edmonton comedy troupe.
You're right.
Casting a show with teens, that the teens would write and star in, and they would direct. And so I managed to get cast on the strength of some comic strips that I'd been writing. So because they saw, I could write comedy, but I didn't have much performance experience. And they suggested improv as a good way to develop ideas for sketches. And they referred a bunch of us to Rapid Fire Theater. And once I started doing improv, I just loved it. And so I stuck with it. So I guess sketch came first, but I've done more improv, I think.
Now, the comic strips that you did, Dave and I also come from a background of cartooning. Were they superhero strips, comedy strips, or what were you drawing when you were drawing?
The stuff I was talking about was actually a newspaper comedy, a comic strip for The Gateway at the University of Alberta. And I actually started with Steve Notley, who does Bob the Angry Flower.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yes. And unlike Steve, I do not have the work ethic to be a cartoonist. You've got to draw every day, and I just don't. It's much easier to make things up.
He was the first cosplaying cartoonist I've ever saw.
Yeah.
He would actually dress as the flower, and he'd usually be next to Keith Knightley from the K Chronicles, who would have a giant fake head of himself next to him. And that was a bizarre it was good, though. It was bizarre, but it was very good.
Yes. And so, my comic strip was called But I guess
just 1 second, Mark. We have a emergency vehicle passing by, and it's blocking out your voice. Sorry.
Okay, well, this is the point where I tell you guys this has been a sting operation.
There we go. Okay, carry on, sir. Sorry.
So yes, my comic strip was self-aware, sort of fourth wall breaking strip about comic strips. It was called Strip Search.
Oh, good name.
And it, you know, had a couple of characters that were the hosts of the strip, but they sort of treated it as, you know, their job was host of a comic strip, and they're well aware that they're cartoon characters. And I get, you know, if I'm going to be completely honest, it was essentially a poor ripoff of What's New with Phil and Dixie from Dragon Magazine.
Love that.
But about comic strips in general.
I remember that.
I did not read Dragon Magazine, but...
I was a Dungeons & Dragons playing nerd, so...
You call yourself a nerd, sir.
Well, I'm now doing a Dungeons & Dragons show.
Yes,
but I never...
I think you knew that we do a Dungeons & Dragons show here in Edmonton as well.
Yeah, it would be nice to do some sort of crossover at some point.
I know, yeah. I'm interested in, like, your guys' format and everything. I, of course, was inspired to do it by the guys in Winnipeg who do improv Dungeons & Dragons out there.
Right.
Although our format is different from there. I just, you know, of course, asked them because I wanted to, you know, the concept spoke to me. And I made ours as much like Dungeons & Dragons as possible, with the exception they have die rolls and we don't. But I'm the dungeon master, and I'm essentially doing exactly what a dungeon master would do, which is playing everyone else that the player encounter. And our player characters are like in full costume with all of their equipment, all their magic weapons and whatnot.
Our conceit is we have Eric Fell, who is the creator of the show, and he plays the dungeon master doing all the voices, mostly Sean Connery. He's got a limited impression range. And then it's us. We only once... Well, we got one person on our show who plays a character called Etta in Standard Action, a web series that's a fantasy web series. So she plays her character from
actually,
that.
I'm actually in an episode of Standard Action.
Oh, wicked. Okay, cool.
I think you put us in touch, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that.
Yes. I will be playing a stone golem.
That makes me happier than I should be. That is excellent. She does her thing in her full character, and we are dressed as our normal selves. The only time we ever flipped that was on Halloween, where we went into full outfits, and she was just dressed as her regular self, it was fun. But yeah, we do it that way. But I've never really played D&D before. I think it was because I did so much improv. I felt I'm getting this from improv. I don't need to get this through that. But much like when I did a show called Star Trek here, I knew nothing really about Star Trek. That was another hole in my nerd tapestry. And I had to learn about that to do that. So, you know, I get nerdier through improv shows, it turns out.
I do a fair number of nerdy improv shows. Of course, I think you've seen The Herald of Galactus that I do with Chris Craddock.
Yeah, fantastic.
Which is a superhero-based improv show, and we basically create a new superhero with the audience, and we see snippets of their entire career over the course of the show, as if you were sort of reading the entire published hero in history of that hero, but out of order.
Yeah, different generations of the hero. So at some point he's more violent. Some points the character is more lighthearted. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It was I remember reading on Facebook. Sharna Halpern loved that format. Like she doesn't throw a lot of praise out. She's nice, but she doesn't throw a lot of praise out. And she went, that was one of the few genuinely new things she's seen in improv, like in the last, you know, decade or so. So
that's very high praise from Sharna, and like we were really glad she liked it. We were actually nervous when she was watching it because we've actually got the word Herald in our title. So
yes,
She
is the She's the co-creator of the Herald with Del Close, which is one of the more popular improv formats.
I see.
Yeah,
and is that where the Herald of Galactus comes from?
Chris came up with that actually. It's our little pun. So if you know both comic books and improv, that title is hilarious.
You're rolling in the aisle.
Yeah. I saw you do that here at the last Vancouver Improv, or maybe it was one before that. And yeah, the audience, aside from laughing, was just like stunned. Was just like, well, holy shit! It was great. It was great just seeing the sheer amount of characters you introduced, and then you know that you kept going back to. Oh man, just it made me feel damn lazy. I was with other improvisers. We just looked at each other and just went, "We are lazy fuckers." Yeah, it was one of those shows that you go, "We got to up our game."
Well, you know, Chris and I are both, you know, fairly, you know, well-read in terms of comic books. And so it's easy when you're just doing an improv show about something you know a lot about. So, for example, if you mentioned the Star Trek show, if you know a lot about Star Trek, you'll find it easy to improvise a Star Trek episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Sharna, we were, as I said, very pleased that Sharna liked it. And in fact, she liked it so much, she just had us down to Chicago. We got to perform at the Del Close Theater.
Oh, how'd that go?
That was great. Lots of fun.
Now, is the fake skull still there?
The one supposed Del skull?
Well, okay, I don't want to, you know, let's say maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't want to be the guy who, like, blows the Santa's cover or whatever. I thought things had been established as to what was what and what was what, but...
I've read various interviews, and so I don't know. I like to believe it's Del skull.
Let's go with that. Yeah. Del donated his skull to the theater, and it's to be used if they're doing any Shakespeare.
Okay.
You would bring that out and...
Nice.
Whether it's true or not.
Yes.
I've certainly done my bit to spread that truth or lie.
So. Okay. I'm going to yes and your offer on that. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, we used to tell that story at the beginning. Every time we did a Herald, we would mention that Del's skull was at the Goodman Theater in Chicago.
Wow. So, Mark, you mentioned that you grew up in a small town, so I'm just curious what town that was and how small was it?
That was in Sedgwick, Alberta, which is about 2 hours east of Edmonton.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so 2 hours, yeah, it's too far to be a suburb of Edmonton, so it would have...
No.
At that time. So how many people live there?
It's small. It's only about 900 people. Edmonton was the big city for me.
Wow. 900 people. Can't even imagine.
Where would you get your nerd supplies from?
Yeah.
Like, where would you get
every time, because Edmonton's not quite a, you know, we were in the suburb of Edmonton, but we would go into Edmonton on a lot of weekends.
Okay.
And there were, of course, comic shops there. And the drugstore, really, is where I got most of my comics from.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good to have a small town that you want to leave and do things from. It's I don't envy kids that were, I used to envy kids that were born in Vancouver proper and had these amazing theaters and could, you know, do things. And
yeah.
Had a public television station that had just amazing facilities, and we'd have to do our thing in rinky-dink North Delta, who had nothing.
Yeah.
And it was like, bring your own sound effects, boys, because we ain't got nothing. But no, it's good to have a place to leave, I think, sometimes when you're a creative type.
Yeah. Well, to me, a small town.
I live in Edmonton, keep in mind.
Yeah, you moved. You just took a slight step. I mean, Edmonton's, well, I guess it's not super big.
No, but it's got a great, here's the thing. Like when you're talking Edmonton, the things people say are it's the second best fringe festival in the world after Edinburgh.
Okay.
And it's where.
Because they both have Ed in the name.
That's right. And and SCTV shot there. So it's basically comedy mecca for Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, certainly. Like when I was a kid, like just knowing that SCTV was being shot in Edmonton was thrilling.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, these days, BioWare is here.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Sorry.
BioWare is the video game company that that created Mass Effect Trilogy, Age, and the original Baldur's Gate games.
And Baldur's Gate 2. And Baldur's Gate 3. Baldur had a lot of games.
There has been no Baldur's Gate 3 yet. Although,
hasn't there? Okay.
I just did work. It was just released very recently, actually, the Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition, which is from a company called Overhaul Games. And they've essentially taken the original BioWare Baldur's Gate, and so it's still the same sort of graphics and everything, but they've added new adventures and new modules and stuff like that. And I think they're essentially testing the waters, see how the Enhanced Edition does, and if it does well, there'll be an Enhanced Edition of Baldur's Gate 2, and then possibly a Baldur's Gate 3.
That seems to be what they're doing with a lot of the games, is they're up-resing, like just on your PlayStations and whatnot, you'll up-res your Ratchet and Clanks or whatever, and throw in a little bit of extra stuff, and yeah, it's nice, and Baldur has so much love going for it that, yeah, it'll be fine. Now, how did you...
It's old-school D&D, too. It's
Yeah. Now, how did you get involved with those guys over at BioWare?
Well, BioWare was the old-fashioned way. Essentially, I went to an audition. I knew some people who worked there. Shauna Perry was one, a friend of mine who was an associate of Rapid Fire Theater. And actually, members of Three Dead Trolls in the Baggy, who I mentioned earlier, Wes Borg and Joe Bird, had done voices on MDK3, which was one of BioWare's early games.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah.
And I used to like that guy. I had no idea that they were both involved in that. Neat.
Yeah, okay. And Donovan Wirken and Paul Mather as well.
Oh, geez. All right.
They're all voices on that. Donovan Wirken, of course, from Atomic Improv.
Atomic Improv, yeah.
Paul Mather, who he was with Atomic Improv as well, of course, but and the Irrelevant Show, but went on to be head writer on Corner Gas and Little Mosque on the Prairie. So
all the prairie related shows. If it was comedy and involved wheat, they went, get me him.
Get me Mather.
Because so many other writers are gluten sensitive.
Yeah.
And could not work on either of those shows just because of the sheer amount of wheat involved.
I wasn't aware of that. I remember him doing political comedy.
2 minutes as well. So.
This hour is 22 minutes? Yeah, that's in Halifax. There's no wheat there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he covers his cod and maritime stuff. So yes, I basically just went to an audition for Baldur's Gate 2 was the very first game that I worked on.
And what was your first character that you played?
It was a character that had one line in the final cutscene. Mm-hmm. So you had to beat the entire game to see my evil cleric sitting around a table with a bunch of other evil clerics plotting about destroying the player character.
And what did you say?
My line was something along the lines of, "There is no need for concern. The fate of this fool is sealed."
Nice.
Yes.
See, and you didn't have to, people listening, you didn't have to play the whole damn game to get to that. You got that for free. You're welcome.
Well, I think it's actually up on YouTube as well. That's how I saw it. Actually.
Oh, good.
Because I was playing through that game. I was playing through Baldur's Gate 2 to beat it so I could see my one line. And I put in hours, days worth of play. And then my roommate's computer crashed and I was playing it on his computer. He lost, you know, a novel he was writing, a couple of plays he was writing, stuff from work. So I couldn't ask him, "Yeah, I think you can recover my save files for Baldur's Gate 2. No. So I just gave up. And then years later, I saw it on YouTube.
I wrote a bunch of jokes for a game called Facebreaker that was done by EA here in town. And I was playing through it just to try to get all the different endings and different, you know, to try to see all my jokes. And then I found out that they cut all the jokes. But they ended up in the trailers. They were in the trailers and then some bonus material, so that's okay.
Oh.
Yeah, but boy, I wasted a lot of time fighting a mime in that damn game. But I just love the name. When they told me the name, it was like, it's called Facebreaker. All right, I'm in. That sounds great. Like, I wouldn't be in anyway. I'd say yes anyway, but yeah. Oh, now that's so cool. So, and then that's led, of course, you know, the Mass Effect, which is enormous. It's such a huge game.
And I've never heard of it.
You've never heard of it. Okay, well, what it is? It's about a Catholic mass in space.
In space, okay.
It goes wrong.
Really?
Yes. And the last version was Christmas Effect. That was the all Christmas version.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Sounds so interesting.
I play the Space Pope.
And your line is, "Do not worry, this fool."
No, it's just "bless you." And they only paid me to say it once.
Well, the character sneezed at the end and you said "bless you."
Hyper blessing. Hit the hyper blessing. Now, my question is, now, it's different than if you have a script for a movie or even like an animated film. It's, you know, it's about 120 pages for a full movie or whatever it is. But for a video game where, now the way this works, I'll explain it to David because he's new to our culture.
Well, there are also people in the audience who may not know these things, so it's better to explain them than to not.
They all know. Anyone on the internet knows this. Anyone who's figured out the technology to download this understands what we're talking about.
How come I don't know?
I don't know.
Okay. No, it's okay, David. You can be like Kitty Pride, the audience's eye.
That's me.
But don't walk through a computer and you're short at all the circuitry. And occasionally you'll be older and you'll have sex with Peter Wisdom. And then that'll
go. Okay, this is making me uncomfortable.
Okay, fair enough. And then you go, "Aren't you still 14? Anyway, very confusing Kitty Pryde.
She's not still 14, is she?
No, she's not, because she had sex with Peter Wisdom and they aged her up to 18. But then it was like, she can't date Colossus because she's too young. And then, well, wait, what's the deal with Colossus? But then he turned evil. And so that's the way things are right now.
Right. Colossus is evil? She was in space inside a giant bullet for a while.
That's right. She was in a giant bullet. And then Colossus became Phoenix for a brief period of time and became a jerk.
I'm confused.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. The important thing is Wolverine and the X-Men is a very good comic. I should link to that comic. What were we talking about? I was saying, what's the length of a script for, say, a Mass Effect.
But you're going to explain to me about the script.
Oh, I was going to explain that there's branching decisions you make in this. So it's like a choose-your-own-adventure situation, but like to the extreme, times a million.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can be a jerk to people. You can be nice. You can be this. You can be that. You can be a lady. You can be a fella. You can like the guys. You can like the gals. It goes any direction. And as long as you picked a male version of Captain Shepard off the top, you're talking to Mark Meer here. So how long are those scripts?
You know, back in the day when we were using paper scripts, after you know, there would just be mounds and mounds. There's so many lines of dialogue, thousands. And you work on the game for months if you were in the position of, say, myself or Jennifer Hale, who voices the female Commander Shepard.
Right.
And so it's a lot, a whole hell of a lot.
Now, do you and her get on, or is there any competition in that you're both the Commander Shepard?
Oh, no. Jennifer is fantastic. And actually, I met her for the first time last year. I didn't meet her until last fall.
Oh, cool.
Where we were both at a convention together, ExpCon in Florida.
And did you do a panel or something together?
Yeah, we were both there. We did several panels and signings together, and that was the first time we'd ever been in the same room. We chatted a little bit on Twitter before that, but subsequently we were both. She lives in Los Angeles, and I happened to be there with my wife Belinda, and so we went for dinner with her and her husband. And Belinda and she actually really hit it off because they both ride horses. And so we went over to Jennifer's house one day, and the ladies rode horses, and that was nice. So there's certainly no competition from our end. And you know, even if you play as Jennifer, you're forced to listen to me as a bunch of aliens. So I'm.
and you're always on the box.
Yes, that's true. Well, no, not always.
Oh, wait, is she on the box?
They finally, for Mass Effect 3, they had two versions, male or female.
Nice, well done. Well, and as Dave knows, there was used to be a big rivalry between Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man, and so I'm glad to hear that that's no longer the case with video games today.
It's finally been settled.
Not fueled by us. Anyway, and in fact, like, I'm a huge fan of Jennifer's work. She does so much. She's one of the busiest voice actors in North America, and I was a huge fan of hers from her work on Justice League Unlimited. And many other games.
Oh, what did she do on Justice League Unlimited?
Oh, she was the go-to voice for Zatanna. She was Giganta. She was Killer Frost. Many others.
Nice. Wow.
More recently, she was Ms. Marvel on Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Ms. Marvel. I didn't realize she was a Marvel character.
Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, the Ms. Marvel mysteries. That's what they do. That's a new book that's coming out from Marvel.
Instead of solving the crime, she would just punch through a wall.
I was just picturing
the killer's back here.
Just beat people up until they tell.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be great, a Sherlock Holmes thing. And then he just goes, well, I'm going to torture you all until someone squeals. What? And then they're all tied up and it goes to town that way.
The Ms. Marvel mysteries would be good. But just, I can literally rip you in half. Rip you in half like a wet piece of tissue paper.
You know what? I know Dr. Doom. I can go and get the time machine. I can just check this shit out. So that's a weird thing in like Marvel, why anything is ever a mystery when there are time machines kicking around all over the place.
I'm just laughing now because I'm just imagining Hercules Poirot coming in.
Hercules Poirot, I shall smite you.
I am using my gray cells.
she was many other characters, and as I say, I'm a fan of hers. And again, like, she is one of the busiest, best voice actors in North America. So for me, getting cast in the game with her was kind of being told, you know, Meryl Streep will be playing the female version of you.
So if it's you playing, it's Captain Jean Shepard, and if it's her, it's Captain Jean Shepard?
Well, basically, you can change. The first name is entered by the player character, so it's the character's always just referred to as Shepard. So.
Yeah, that's the new thing that they do in the games, is you can make your character look like whatever you want at the beginning as well. You know, and then when you're getting killed, it's really disturbing because you're watching yourself get killed.
I think we did something like that with a boxing game one time. You put my face.
Yeah,
that
was Facebreaker. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
well, they had it didn't really work, but you could scan your face in and then beat up your friends until they're bloody and mangled. Yeah, it's a tech that will work in the future, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, but they've got those 3D printers now.
Oh, isn't that weird? Yeah, you can make your own action figures of yourself or, basically it's all going to be sex toys. Let's be honest. That's what it's all going to be. It's going to be very dirty things for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then toys as well, and Christmas ornaments.
Yep.
Well, they're all toys in a way.
I hear that they actually they got a 3D printer that actually made a gun that fired.
Yes. Yeah. And I think someone used that on some TV show, and I think someone will be using that on another TV show, and that will be used on TV shows forever. It was CSI, because they brought up the John Malkovich movie with Clint Eastwood.
I thought it was the movie Existenz.
What happened in Existenz?
Remember they have that gun, the flesh gun?
Oh, they had the flesh. Yeah, that's right. Shoots teeth. That's right. But in, I forget what the name of the movie was, but it was one where Clint Eastwood did not save the president.
And all the president's men.
No, sir, that's not it at all. And
Pitsy's honor.
No, it's not it either. But yeah, John Malkovich brings a plastic
gun. In the line of fire.
And it, ooh,
that, Gran Turismo.
That's right. It was Gran Turismo.
He didn't save the president because he was an old man.
Okay, I like that you also said Gran Turismo, not Gran Torino. So it was the video game.
It's a different town in Italy, the town of Turismo.
They're catching up to the president.
We've crossed over several lines.
as well we should.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about like what you're nerding out on like right now. What are you enjoying yourself as a consumer of nerd products? What are you liking for movies, for comics, for what's in Mark's world right now?
Oh, well, I always keep my hand in, so I'm usually up to my neck in nerdy things. But let's see, comics on the rack that I'm reading right now, that I guess my top ones would be The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Quite enjoying that. Another Kirkman book, Invincible. Fables is great. Quite enjoying that. Usually just buy anything that's BPRD or Hellboy related.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Goon I'm quite enjoying.
Okay. That's...
Which is Eric Powell.
Eric Powell's. Oh, okay. Again, there's a lot of zombies in that one too. There's
okay.
It's very funny. It's like if Popeye was a real big asshole.
Okay.
Yeah. And fought zombies.
Okay.
Yeah. Like Walking Dead's fantastic. Invincible is it's like Marvel superheroes with like a bucket of blood. Like so much blood. Just like if Spider-Man went up to the lizard and just went fuck you and just tore his mouth open, split his face apart, and it's like that kind of thing, but with a heart of gold,
an actual heart,
with a heart of blood,
which is ripped from someone's chest. That's
right. Yeah, when someone gets into a fight and that, it's just a mess. It's what it would look like.
Okay, so it's just trying to add a sort of a reality to the comic.
I don't know if it's even reality. It's just but they do show people with superhuman strength punching normal humans and the consequences that would result.
Yeah, and also people have mustaches.
A lot of mustaches.
That's going too far.
The main Superman of the world, when the book starts, has a mustache.
Well, because he can't shave it. It just breaks all the razors all break on it.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a beard, just a mustache. And in fact, I think it's established that every male member of his race has a mustache.
That's right, yeah. You go to his world and it's a big mustache world.
It's just like always Movember there.
Yeah, right. it is a really good book that goes in some really interesting directions. Have you been reading Saga at all?
I have not picked up Saga yet. Saga is a book that I'm going to sort of wait for the trades for, and then
The trade has just come out. Let me tell you.
I will.
I'm giving you a stern finger shake of advice on this.
Ian, they're probably not carrying that at the drugstore.
Probably not. No. So I do have a file now.
No, that's I can't sing the praises of that book enough. Just because it merges all the and by the way, it seems like all the things you'd like in one place. So yes,
perfect. But I mean, I often do that with books that I know I'm going to like, but I will wait so that I can read them. Like in some ways, I wish I did that with Walking Dead, but I can't not pick up an issue if it's on the stands because one thing I'm afraid of it getting spoiled. I do find it more satisfying to read in the trades. Just like with, collections of DVDs, just to sit down and watch a whole season rather than wait week by week or, as in the case of, say, The Walking Dead TV show, now I have to wait several months before I can watch the next one.
Well, it seems terrible the way they do TV shows now where they break the season up more than they did when we were younger.
Yeah, sir, that seems to be the new normal. But
it seems awful. Like before you knew that summer was the break.
Yes.
And then you'd have like, your fall and spring or winter, spring of the show, and then it would go into their hiatus.
There's also shows have much shorter runs than they typically did.
Yeah, that's true.
There are all these, HBO shows and AMC shows, and they generally, they'll have a dozen episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess that leads me into stuff I'm watching on TV. Walking Dead, obviously. American Horror Story is a favorite currently.
Mm-hmm. The new season is a completely different storyline than the last one. The first one was a haunted house, and this one is you're in an asylum. Everyone's cuckoo bananas.
Yes, and I like that.
That sounds terrible. They're cuckoo bananas.
Cuckoo bananas.
It's scary.
But delicious.
Next year, ice cream factory.
Jelly bean factory. The scary place.
It's amazing what they can do, by the way, on TV right now. With you're speaking of Walking Dead and American, like I haven't watched a lot of them. I watch them on a plane usually when I watch American Horror Story. That's where I've seen most of them. But like, just they're as good as, I don't want to say they're as good as a movie because that sounds condescending, but they're just, fuck, they're dense and so packed and mm-hmm. so good. It almost makes it hard to watch like a horror movie or an action movie or something. You're just going like, yeah, I'm not getting as much out of it as I did TV, mm-hmm. you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's so much more satisfying. And The Walking Dead, for example, is a lot. It's the zombie movie that never ends, that just keeps going. And mm-hmm. I think that's how they build it several times.
It was scary when they were around the barn for a while. A little too long around that house for me.
Right, a little too long on the farm.
A little too long. Became the Waltons with zombies for a while there. It just was like a lot of yapping, a lot of, he's a little sick. I don't know what's going to happen. Oh, I'm a little tense. And then, yeah, third season was just, there you right? go to town.
I'm afraid I gave up after the first season.
So. Oh, third season is okay. Pretty sweet.
I quite enjoy it. Yeah. I mean, you're preferring Oz with zombies to the Waltz with zombies?
I'm not a huge fan of prison type shows, but they're spending enough time outside doing things.
Yes.
You know,
with
the plot line at the other place.
Oh, so they've ended up at a prison as a natural place to protect yourself from zombies.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of food.
Better than a mall, Dawn of the Dead proof.
A friend of mine who is who was the guy who hired me to work on the Simpsons comic is one of the head writers and main producers on it now, Scott Gimple. And so when he started like in the second season, I was like, go, Scott, go. But he was doing all the stuff around, you know, when it was all around the house and it was like they ran out of money. Like, I know right. That's what happened was basically the network went, does it have to be zombies? That was a serious note that they gave. Does it have to be zombies? Could it just be them hearing zombies? Do we have to see the zombies? Why don't they just talk about zombies they've killed before?
Wow.
Yeah. And then they got some money and we got our third season and everything's fine.
I think it does have to be about zombies.
It kind of does. Yeah, do we have to see Dracula? You do. It's called Dracula. Show Dracula.
I'm glad I missed the second season then. That sounds like one long bottle episode.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about the second season.
But actually, the end of the second season is pretty good.
That's true. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well, we went through this like when Brian K. Vaughan came on to Lost. And he came on to Lost after the second season, which was, if you remember, the second season of Lost was,
I never saw it.
And then it picked up, and then depending on how you feel about it, it resolved. You know, but he was off by that point. But he wrote some really good episodes of it. So it's nice that people I know seem to go into shows that are in trouble and help them out.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Scott did a show called Life.
Life with the detective.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that show.
That was a really good
show. That was a good show.
And then he did Flash Forward, which wasn't super good, but his episodes were good.
Did not see that.
Yeah. There was one.
Flashpoint Forward? Is that the one with the SWAT team that can travel through time?
That doesn't exist.
Okay.
But there was an episode of Flash Forward where it starts off with a Bjork song, and it's everyone on in this town or city basically falling asleep, and you see what happens when, say, a whole city falls asleep at once, and it's just this bad things occur. I'll put a clip up online of it.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's really, like, chilling what occurs. So I'll just say that much, and I'll put something up online.
Interesting.
Yeah. But please continue. What else are you? What are you watching on the TV?
Oh, well, let's see.
Game of Thrones. I'm assuming.
Game of Thrones. Yes. Anxiously waiting for that. I hear it got pushed back to March. So it's like
balls. Come on.
Yeah.
There's a midget strike.
Breaking Bad, I'm catching up on. I'm in season 4 right now, so I've got a few of those stockpiled.
I've cheated and I've watched on Netflix the season openers and season enders, and then I've just watched the last season and went, I got it, all right, I'm in, and then I'll watch the others later, which makes people who are fans of the show scream at me and go, you gotta see the, I'm like, I'm good, I'll just I'm doing comic book rules. I don't want to read all the back issues. Just like, give me a catch up issue and I'll be fine. All right, I got it. All right, he's
it. All right, all right. I could not watch it like that. No, I'd have to watch it all in order.
Once again, you're a better person than I am.
Oh, no worries, no worries. Let's see, TV wise. Oh, also anxiously awaiting the new season of Venture Brothers.
Oh, yeah, very good show.
I still haven't seen the Halloween special they put out. It was available on iTunes, but apparently not in our country.
Yeah, that happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
Not available in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks a lot, CRTC.
Not even on the streaming network Igloo.
Yeah, I don't want to – listen, I want to legally watch as many shows as possible. But when you don't give me an option, America / England – I'm going to do what I got to do.
We're going to find it.
Clearly, the legal route is the first route. But yeah, the Venture Brothers, for David, who doesn't know, and all the rest of our audience knows. But for David, who doesn't know, it's basically Johnny Quest as if what happened after Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest, like when he grew up?
Basically, yeah. Like it's an older teenager kind of situation. Oh, okay. It's basically loosely based on Johnny Quest.
I see.
And then it's you know,
Cuckoo Bananas.
It is Cuckoo Bananas, okay. But it's also very grounded. It's very funny, but the really good characters. It's tough to explain. I will lend you a DVD set.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
Okay. You're in for a treat, actually. Venture Brothers is one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, it's a tough one to sell on people in my shitty description there. But like, hey, do you like Johnny Quest? Not really. Well, then you'll love.
I often describe it. Did you ever see the Tick Saturday morning cartoon?
Dave is shaking his head. No, you have to say no.
Oh, sorry.
You can't say.
I thought I just assumed he was talking to you because you're going to say yes, I did.
Did you ever read the comic book The Tick?
No, I did.
Did you ever watch the live action?
I did see
of the
I did see the TV show The Tick.
Oh, very good. Okay. Does that help?
I think we've moved away from the original point. I'm a busy person. Dexter, I guess there's only one episode of that left.
I have been enjoying this season of Dexter. I thought I wouldn't like it at all after last year ended. And I was just like, it's Jump the Shark. You can't have this happen. But yeah, I've actually been enjoying it.
Yeah, this one's not bad. I do think the John Malkovich season was the high point.
The John Lithgow season?
Oh, sorry, Jesus, John. Did it again.
Sorry, I just confused.
Yes, the John Lithgow season. Also, I'm looking forward to the John Malkovich season.
That would be a good season.
That would be good. Yeah, I feel like what I've been enjoying this season is it's really made clear what a dick Dexter is. And I think, you know, it's hard when the narrator is a dick to think of him as a dick. But this season's really brought that out, so I've been enjoying that aspect of it.
Now, I don't follow the show. I've only really watched the animated version. There is an animated version. There is. There's some prequels.
He's just read the slash fic. That's what he meant to say.
Well, no, but I am aware of the novels now. Is do they go with a supernatural route that the novels do?
No.
Okay.
Pretty much.
The novels go a supernatural route?
Yeah. He's possessed by a demon, basically.
Yeah.
No shit, really?
Yep. And in the novels, the boy joins him, I can't remember the name, Aster and Cody. Cody joins him on his killing sprees in the book.
Wow. Books. No, I had no idea.
So the TV show like went off in its own direction in the first book. Like it took the first book as a template and then basically broke the whole plot of the book and just carried on in its own way and never looked back.
Interesting.
Well, it's a smart thing that, you know, because then if you're a fan of the books, you can still watch the TV
show. You can still watch the TV show.
It's the same thing with Walking Dead. Like there's many characters in Walking Dead that are also in the comic Walking Dead, but certain characters that are dead in Walking Dead are not dead in the comic. Some in this and this person loses a leg, but this person loses an arm. So you can enjoy both simultaneously, which seems to be the smart way to go about doing that kind of thing.
Well, I'm all caught up in the comics, and yet I don't know what's going to happen in the next episode of the TV show. And it was very smart of Kirkman to go that route because I'm riveted. I need to know what happens next.
Well, I just think it's nice because the writers aren't tied down to trying to, you know, constantly be adapting this novel to television when it's really hard to adapt, you know, writing to, you know, novel or whatever, writing to television is much better. Just use it as a jumping off point and carry on from there.
Mm. Now, speaking of Walking Dead, if you want like another thing of Walking Dead that's really good, and I don't mean the action.
Just Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah, okay. That's also good. Okay. I don't mean the action-packed video game that I think hasn't come out yet, but the downloadable version you can get on the iPad, you can get it on the PlayStation, you get it on your Xbox. They've got like a Walking Dead adventure on there, five episodes, really, really good.
Is that animated?
That's what I hear. Yeah, I was thinking of downloading it for my iPad, actually.
Yeah, I think you can get okay, if you're getting on the iPad, you have to pay. But I think the first two are free on the PlayStation Network.
That's how they get you.
Yeah.
That's how they get you.
And it's, I mean, there's demos out there if you want to just try it, first of all, and see what you think. But it's great. You make, like, little ethical choices, and you just do a little thing, and then all of a sudden something comes up and goes, she will remember this. They will remember what you did. Your kindness will be remembered. Your cruelty will be remembered. And then they carry that forward through not just that episode, but all five of the episodes.
Hmm.
So what the things you do really do affect the story. And it moves along. It's real simple. Like, it's simply done, but very, very effective. And when zombies attack you, it is scary as hell.
Awesome. And so is it, are you actually, like, fighting zombies in this game?
Yes, or? Yes, you are when that occurs. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're a fella. You find yourself in the Walking Dead world, and stuff's occurring. You know, you go to a house, and there's a little girl in a treehouse, and sort of goes from there. What do you want to do about that?
Yeah. Nice.
Isn't that the best part of all those things, though, whether it's 28 Days Later or Walking Dead or I think the original version, which is the Day of the Triffid, where someone wakes up and everything's different? Do you know what I mean? Like, the whole world is changed in some catastrophic way, and they're just, like, that's my favorite part of all those, whether it's 28 Days Later or The Walking Dead. I love the first episode or first couple episodes where this person's just exploring this world that he's woken up into, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's, after that, yeah, I lost interest.
Robert Kirkman actually wrote about that. He wrote Walking Dead before 28 Days Later came out.
Mm-hmm.
However, it hadn't been published yet, so it was, like, at the printers, and he talks about it in the letter column, I think, of one of the first issues. And so his comic is at the printers, and then he went, well, I've sent off my issue. I'm going to go watch a movie. And he went to see 28 Days Later.
But what's the movie called? It's called Holy Fuck Oh Shit Oh Balls.
Yeah, God damn it.
But the thing is the day that Triffids already did that. The guy wakes up in the hospital, and
it's happened before.
His eyes are bandaged, and he, you know, has to explore this world that has changed catastrophically while he was sleeping, you know?
I think the nice thing to do would be, if a zombie apocalypse happens and you're in a hospital, say you work in a hospital, well, first of all, you got to leave because there's a morgue that's going to come to life. But I think take some Post-it notes, just write down zombie apocalypse, good luck, and, like, put that on the people who are the comatose patients, you know, just in case they wake up and they're like, thank you. A little note that helped me along the way.
That would be kind of helpful, but you'd still be so discombobulated. You probably wouldn't understand what it was saying to you. You know,
No one goes to the cafeteria, picks up, once again, some pudding, you know, for your journey.
Well, because the pudding's all in the green room.
Yeah.
There's none in the cafeteria.
Hospitals don't have a green room.
No, they don't have, but they don't have pudding in the cafeteria. Yogurt.
Are you more running zombie or are you more shambling zombie, Mark? What do you?
I tend to favor shambling zombie. That said, you know, I've enjoyed some fast zombie movies. The Dawn of the Dead remake, I quite enjoyed.
Yes.
And actually, what I think is the original fast zombie movie, Return of the Living Dead from, like, 1985.
Is that the one with the punk rockers?
That is, and the one where zombies first started eating brains specifically.
Now, could you explain this to me? This is something I have never understood, which is, you know, where they're going, brains, brains, we want to eat your brains. But if you eat a brain, you have killed, that person will not become a zombie because injury to the brain is the only way to kill a zombie. So where are these new zombies coming from?
The new zombies are people like, so people who get, you know, eaten by these, the brain zombies, I would think they wouldn't reanimate.
That's right. So where are the new ones coming from?
Someone who was just bit and managed to get away would.
Okay. Or I suppose just the dead.
Just
the dead
people in general. Died,
people in general.
People that scared had a heart attack.
Also, specifically in Return of the Living Dead, it's a chemical that's reanimating them. And so they need to either get bitten or a corpse needs to be exposed to the chemical. But beyond that, now that I think of it, in Return of the Living Dead, in any case, shooting them in the brain didn't work.
Oh, how do you kill them in Return of the Living
Dead? It was actually a plot point that, like, people were like, well, hit him in the brain. I've seen zombie movies, and it didn't work. they actually had to be completely destroyed, which is actually what started the mass zombie outbreak, is because one of the first zombies, they put it in a crematorium oven and burn it up, and then the smoke from that zombie goes up into the clouds and then rains on a graveyard.
Oh, man. You can't win for losing, can you?
Ugh, shouldn't have done that in Vancouver.
They nuke the city. Try to stop it, but then the last thing you see is rain clouds and the cemeteries.
Nuking the city just doesn't work, you know.
No,
you know, that's one thing we've learned over time, and good for them. In the latest Avengers movie, that was what they thought: we're gonna nuke the city. I ain't gonna fly. You still got the damn hole in the sky. So what? So what? You blew up the city. Who fucking cares? There's a hole in the sky that still leads from their home. That's not going to go up through the hole and hurt them.
Yeah.
Oh, we thought all of them were here. That's right. There's more? They have a planet or something?
Yeah. That was a stupid council of the elders or whatever the hell that was.
Council of the elders.
Whatever they were.
They had Tony Stark to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's called the Council of the Elected Elders.
Just shoot it up the hole, man. That's the way to do it. And luckily they're close.
That's actually one of my regrets about I loved it, the Avengers movie, but one of my regrets is that, of course, rights to Marvel's other characters are with other studios, so we'll never see Tony Stark and Reed Richards conferring on a problem. Unless something major happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I was hoping at the end you'd get a little Spider-Man drops by, you know, Hugh Jackman drops by.
But X-Men are with Fox, Spider-Man is with Sony.
Well, here's a thing that might change that, in my mind, is called money. It's like, you know what would happen, because like Spider-Man came out after the Avengers, right?
Yeah. The new one, yes.
The new one, okay.
Yeah. The new Spider-Man did, yes.
Right, so what you say to Sony is like, oh, by the way, can we just have Spider-Man at the end? Everyone will go nuts. And then guess what will happen? When you do your movie, it will sell even better. Works well for both of us. Shaky hand, and that's how you do it. You know, it's like we're going to make both of our groups a whole bunch of money, buddy. How about that? We do a little teamy up.
Yeah, the problem with the studios is like, well, I like the part where it helps me, but I don't like the part where it helps you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we both make infinite money. Come on.
No such thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You'll probably be able to buy Fantastic Four's rights pretty soon. You must be able to.
I would think that they're...
I think with the studio, they're just like, yeah, but I'd prefer if I made double infinity money.
Fair is enough. I'm looking forward to the Ant-Man movie. That's the one that I'm... you got Edgar Wright directing that?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Did he work on the script for it as well?
What's that?
Did he work on the script for it as well?
I'm not sure. But oh, okay. It's going to be fantastic. Edgar Wright doing Ant-Man? That's going to be all kinds of good.
It doesn't sound like that great a superhero to me.
Ant-Man?
Yeah.
He's an ant. With ants.
Who cares?
What do you mean? He controls ants.
They're ugly.
Oh, you fool. Sorry, I have to use supervillain dialogue on you right now. But you fool. Ant-Man is a fantastic character. I know there was a little thing where people were going, hey, you really got to get Giant Man or Ant-Man into the Avengers movie. And people were like, it'd be good, like Nathan Fillion guy. He'd be good as a Hank.
Yes, that rumor was rampant. In fact, that rumor was so widely spread that I'm friends with Nathan, and I basically dropped him a line to congratulate him. And he told me, no.
Because he used to do improv with Rapid Fire, right?
Yes, and actually still does on occasion. He came for our 30th anniversary last season. He dropped by for a theater sports show, and in the 20th anniversary season of Dynasty as well, he played. Nathan actually played my son.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, in the soap opera tradition, we had my character had a son who was played by basically a handful of blankets. And in the following episode where Nathan guested, he basically just, played the role of my son. And we just had a little voiceover saying, the part of Disney Orlando will be played by Nathan Fillion.
And then the audience went.
Yes.
They all shit their pants. They all had to take a break where everyone changed their pants.
Yeah.
I shared a cab or some sort of car with Adam Baldwin, who was also in Firefly, when we were in Calgary. And we were talking about various things, and theater sports got mentioned. I went, they got a really good theater sports, Rapid Fire. I brought that up. And he said to me, what's theater sports? I was like, it's a competitive improv. Never heard of that. And I thought, well, Nathan never brought that up on the set. Never brought up his days doing the old theater sports, I suppose.
I guess not.
I guess he was ashamed.
Yeah.
He's trying to play it cool among all the other cool kids there, when you're there. Yeah. I guess maybe that's the way it is. Maybe you're too bad. He seems very
all
funny.
All Nathan talks about is theater sports when I'm with him. It's weird.
It's like you two did it together, did theater sports together.
Yeah, that's what we assumed.
We did, actually, Nathan put me on my very first second half team, which is where the senior players play. and he invited me to play with them. So I owe Nathan Villian my start in improv.
Now, what does Rapid Fire do now? They do theater sports. What other shows go on over there? By the way, are you still with Rapid Fire?
I am still with Rapid Fire. Okay. You were mentioning those big superhero shows earlier. We just did our Halloween show this year. And so those big full costume superhero shows, that was always the Halloween show, which I produce. And so it's gone under a variety of names depending on which company's heroes we've been doing. So we've done Improv on Infinite Earths. We've done Improv Secret Wars for the Marvel version. So we did the back and forth between Marvel and DC for a number of years. Then last year we did a fantasy versus sci-fi.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So the sci-fi team was Luke and Leia, a red shirt, a Klingon, the Doctor and Captain Six. And the fantasy team was Aslan, Harry Potter, Gandalf, Conan, and Alice from Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, God damn it. That sounds fun.
It was great. It was a lot of fun. I was one of the moderators. It was an orc and a stormtrooper moderated.
So were you the orc or the stormtrooper?
I was the orc.
Of course you were. Yeah. Talking.
Because we couldn't get the stormtrooper's helmet mic to work, so we just the stormtrooper was silent.
Has one line anyway.
Yeah. Then just this last year, we did horror heroes versus horror villains. And I moderated as Cthulhu.
And so who was on I got to know who was on both teams of that. Who was
the horror villains were Freddy Krueger, Jason, Leatherface, Dracula, the creature from the Black Lagoon, and the ghost from The Grudge.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
And on the hero side was Hellboy, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Ash, Blade, and Professor Van Helsing.
Nice. A lot of vampire killers.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I've never...
So no answer for Freddy, Jason, or Leatherface.
Leatherface could, match up with Ash. They both have chainsaws.
I guess that's...
And actually, both Jason and Freddy have gone up against Ash in the comics.
That's true, ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ash could take them all on, no problem.
How so?
He could kick ass.
How so?
He is kick ass.
Yeah, but Freddy has dream powers.
Yeah.
And you can't kill Jason. We've proven that. You cannot kill Jason, even if you blow him up with a missile.
I think we've proven you can't kill Ash.
I did like that. Whatever movie started with Jason being blown up by a missile, I loved that opening. The rest of the movie, not so great. But where they just had the gal who was showering and then ran through the woods, and then he was about to kill her, and she did a flip over his head, and then the entire army showed up, and they all just shoot Jason with every weapon imaginable, and then someone just just a missile at him, just blows him to pieces, and like, yeah, we're done, first 5 minutes of the movie.
I believe, was that Jason X?
No, Jason X, isn't Jason X the one in space?
That's the one in space. You're right.
Oh, I thought Jason X was the one where he's like a black militant leader, working in the ghettos to, isn't that the one?
No, sir.
Okay, forget it.
No, this I think was Jason Goes to Hell. I think this was the one where they blow up Jason and then his heart, someone takes his heart and then his heart crawls along and goes into somebody and possesses people.
Okay.
And then it's one where you do have like the Necronomicons there, all this other stuff. And then it ends with Freddy dragging him down to hell. Is the final thing. Spoilers for a movie from 10 years ago.
So the movie went from taking place in a camp to becoming camp. That's basically what
it
happened.
It was camp through the whole damn thing.
Okay. I don't remember the first ones being that campy, but I only ever saw them at parties. So they're stuff you'd play on the television.
For their time, they were straight up horror movies. And then by the time they got to like Jason Takes Manhattan.
I did like actually, that because
that's not a made up one. That was actually a real.
Oh, that shot here. The reason I like that one is two actors that I know were killed in that one, Saffron Henderson and Martin Cummings. And it was cool seeing people I actually knew being killed by Jason. And also it was great seeing Jason on the SkyTrain, which is our little subway here. It's like, hey.
Yeah, I did notice that Manhattan looked very much like Vancouver.
Yeah, it's not the first time. The Hulk has also shown up on our SkyTrain when it's supposed to be, I think, a New York subway system. And it's not at all.
Not at all. It doesn't look anything like it.
No, sir. Not at all. Have you ever done a horror movie yourself?
Actually, recently I did one called Nightmare Island 3.
That sounds like a horror movie.
Yeah. It's just a locally made one. My character, October, from Tiny Plastic Men, actually appeared in that and is killed in that. It was kind of his first incarnation.
You seem like the kind of guy who's been, I picture being blown apart and maimed in horrible ways in films. And
I just gutted with a hook in that one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well done.
And that's not horrible at all.
I did a little thing called Truck Stop Bloodsuckers, which, and I did a little cameo as October as a vampire in that. And that was produced by Mosaic, who does Caution May Contain Nuts and Tiny Plastic Men. And that was on Byte TV. It was first as, it was just as little webisodes, and then they showed, I believe, the full 2-hour version on Halloween night.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think there's not a lot of difference between sometimes, you know, with comedy and horror. Like, if you, I was thinking, like, if you can write comedy, you can probably write horror, because horror is just taking it then too far.
Yes. You know? Did you see The Cabin in the Woods by any chance?
Yes, sir, I did. Did you see Cabin in the Woods, David?
Yes, I did.
And we actually were discussing Rex Reed's review of that on a previous show. Did you read Rex Reed's review?
I did not. What did he think?
He thought that it had too many vampires on the moon.
What?
Okay, let me explain, Mark. Here's the thing. I'll send you the link. Basically, Rex Reed went and saw this movie and seemed to review a different movie. Like, he was complaining about a lot of stuff that happens in the movie that does not happen in the movie, including vampires circling the moon and sucking the young stud's blood and all this other stuff, which in no way happens in this movie at all. But it
interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. Like he fell asleep during the movie, had a dream, reviewed the dream when he woke up. But please go on. What did you think of Cabin in the Woods?
Oh, I quite enjoyed it. I'm a big Joss Whedon fan. And that was fantastic, especially when it started to get Lovecraftian, because I'm also a huge Lovecraft fan.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, they just went for it. And two people I know in there as well, Peter Kalamis and Ellie Harvey, also die in bad ways.
Yes.
In that movie. So enjoyable.
I spotted Ellie, actually. That was great.
Yeah, you don't want to spoil what happens in the movie or what the characters are all based on. But when you find out, you go like, oh, obviously it's that. Obviously it's that show that you're basing all those characters on. But no, really did enjoy that that film a lot. I like some comedy, and with my horror, I'm not a big torture porn fella.
There is a lot of it on his computer here, I've noticed, but other than that, not a huge torture porn fan.
Yeah, I'm not a big Saw fella or Final Destination. You know, I like the characters to be sort of smart and figure things out, and I don't like. Here's why I don't like at the end of a movie. Hey, you know all that stuff you did? It was pointless.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's hopeless. Well, what were just you even trying?
The ironic twist conclusion where everything they did to escape totally turns around and they just die anyway.
Yeah, no, that wasn't the thing at all. No, yeah. You forgot. No, forget it.
Sucks.
Yeah, Event Horizon, that kind of movie. Yeah, just like, oh, it was pointless. You wasted your time. Okay, bye, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Good night, everyone.
You can murder people. Just be fair about it. Yeah. Just be fair. And Cabin in the Woods, to me, was fair.
It was fair.
Although in that sense, then, Evil Dead is unfair. Cause
how is that unfair?
Because he gets killed at the end. I mean, you don't see it, but...
You mean the first Evil Dead movie?
Yeah.
But then by the second movie, you realize he didn't.
That's true, but when if you only watch the original one, you're like, oh, all that work, and went outside and thought the dawn was going to save him, and no!
That's your first, you know, it's a little bit of a cheap thing you do as a writer in your first movie. You want to end with a...
But you can see where they're going for. It's kind of like, it's dawn, I'm safe. Nope.
I don't know, because like I sometimes like a bleak ending to a horror movie. Like, well, for example, the Dawn of the Dead remake. If you watch till the end of the credits, you see that the people that you thought got away, in fact, were just wiped out by zombies.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, I think to me, what it would be is if then all the people that you shot in the head came back to life and just went, oh, that just temporarily hurts them. And they're fine. And the whole thing you did was pointless. Like to me, I don't mind the monster, the acceleration of the monsters. Oh, it was worse than you thought. I'm fine with that. Okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah. And I can even go with a bleak ending. Like, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the movie The Mist, but
that ending.
Yeah. You didn't like the ending? How about you, Mark? Did you like the ending?
I thought that was really ballsy. I was like, oh, wow, how did that get made? Because it's bleaker than the ending of the Stephen King book.
Stephen King liked that ending of the movie more than he liked the ending of his own book. Mm-hmm. He's a fussy little kitten, guy.
My problem with the ending is that it completely turns around what the characters stand for through like 7/8 of the movie. You know, like the character played by Marcia Gay Harden she's death, right? She is giving up. She is all about, you know, she's this sort of dark force. And they're the hope. They're brightness. They're light. They're the people who are positive. They can get through this, you know? And then when one thing goes wrong or one little bit of hopelessness comes into their lives, they just shoot themselves. Like, it seemed like...
There was more than one little bit of hopelessness, though.
It did seem like some really bad stuff was going to happen real soon.
Agreed. I think they should wait until
they'd already gone through a bunch of bad stuff. They had, people had spiders coming out of them. They had crazy birds flying through windows.
Did you see that giant monster walk by?
I saw it.
Yeah. And then I thought it was too much having at the end after he's like, you know, killed everyone and he finds out the thing, it going, wah, wah. And then him slapping his forehead.
Yeah, I thought that was too much.
But I do like the, well, one of my favorite modern horror films, The Ring, the American version. I do love that, you know, the whole movie, like, save that girl from whatever happened to her. You can free that ghost, and the goose is the bad one. And then she's driving out to see her dad, who, you know, she's going to show this movie to save her son. You know, like, I'd say I do like that. Like, to me, that makes perfect sense. And it is very bleak, but it follows the logic of the film. It's not the sudden, you know, cheaty kind of twist where you're like, okay, well, that's sad, but fuck you. Which is how The Mist made me feel.
It's sad, but fuck you.
Well, I just remember when I was watching the movie, when they killed the Marcy Gay Harden character finally in the movie, this person in the theater said, it's about fucking time!
Was like, that person you?
No, it was someone else, and I was just like, I agree, you know, like... Bully for you.
That's a good horror movie when people scream stuff.
Yeah, when people get so, they're so frustrated at this person's behavior that when they finally get off, they're like, yeah.
Yeah. I was a little on the, what was the movie in New York and it's a big monster attacking and it's a shaky cam. It's a guy.
Oh, Cloverfield. I like Cloverfield.
My problem with Cloverfield was I was sitting in the third row and
okay, that's a mistake.
I was nauseous for 2 days.
You didn't see
it?
Because I remember when I went to see it, there were signs on the outside of the theater on the door as you went in warning you about that film. So I guess they didn't have it at that theater.
No. Well, I was there for, I got like a free preview or something. And so I was in there. So you really couldn't complain, okay. But like we were all sick as dogs.
And was it full? So you had to sit down at the front?
Yeah.
See, I had that problem with, I went to see The Two Towers, the Lord of the Rings film.
Right.
And we'd gone early, bought tickets, and then we returned late. So the only place we could get seats was like right down, like second row.
Right.
In front of this giant screen. And that film has so much fast cutting during the fight sequences. I started getting like a migraine headache and a sore neck from twisting my head back and forth trying to see what was happening. Oh, it was terrible.
Well, I say
did not enjoy it.
Plan better for the Hobbit movie, which opens tonight.
I'm not going to go see it.
You're not seeing the Hobbit at all?
No.
Really?
Explain.
I just find the whole idea of three films is so obnoxious that I'm going to go see it. Of course, I'm such a sucker. I just feel like I'm not going to go see it. I just feel like I should boycott that
playing,
piece of crap.
Playing the part of the internet tonight, Dave Dedrick.
Ugh.
I'm never reading this comic book again. Ugh. I'm never going to that thing again.
It's just
He's
outrageous.
Going on day one.
Three
well,
films.
I admit, I was sort of a little trepidatious when I heard they were splitting into three. However, I do trust Peter Jackson, and yeah. I think... The stuff that they're using to, you know, for want of a better word, pad out the material in the story, it seems like it's at least rooted in Tolkien's work. Like it's essentially expanding, like in the book where they'll just, you know, in one sentence they'll say, and there were some stone giants. Now you'll have like a giant sequence involving stone giants.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to see, you know, the goblins fighting the orcs. You'll actually, you know, those bits where, you know, Gandalf buggers off for long periods of time. You don't know where he is. We're going to see what he's doing.
Okay.
And if, you know, if there's an extra hour of Gandalf fighting orcs in this movie, you won't hear me complaining.
I don't know. I'm still... Two films I was okay with. I was kind of like, that's a bit long, but okay, two films. Three films, I just don't want to end up with another Return of the King with the 14 different endings to the movie with a bunch of slow motion hugging of hobbits. You're just like, get a room.
And they're getting on that boat.
When?
Are we staying for the whole credits?
15 minutes of crying. Oh my God. And I mean, let's face it. There's a case where the ending of the book was 100 times better than the end of the film, where they could have... Like they could have just watched it once and said, you know what? We really blew it by not including that ending. Let's go back and fix it. We have time. There's still two more movies to come out. No. They're like, this is great. Having them crying in bed, having them crying at a wedding, having them crying on a dock. This is the best ending to a movie that's ever going to happen.
There were some indulgent goodbyes, certainly.
Oh, my God. Indulgent.
And given that, they didn't include the scourging of the Shire.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the whole point of it, is what they learned. Like, through their adventures, they come back changed, right? They come back to the... And then they're able to, like, defend themselves and defend the Shire. And everyone's like, you guys rock! Woo! Instead, we get them crying on a dock.
So God. More scourging is what you want in these movies.
Well, because Saruman and Wormtongue come to the Shire.
No need to make up names.
Come to the Shire, mm-hmm. You know, while everything's happening, you know, wherever in those places. I can't remember the name now, Gondor and whatnot. And then, so when the hobbits come back, Saruman and Wormtongue have taken over the Shire.
Oh, okay.
And are like the big bosses.
Right.
And so they come back and they kick their asses, send them on the, yeah. you know, send them where they...
So it's sort of like they've turned it
send
into...
Send them packing.
They've sent it, turned it into Potterville. There's like strip clubs.
Yeah,
that's
right. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. And then Frodo comes in and he's like, you're nothing but a scurvy little spider in your web. Yeah, exactly.
You know, that said, I really enjoyed Saruman's death scene in the extended cut of Return of the King.
How does he die? He falls? Oh, no, the trees do something to him?
No, yeah, he basically ants, he gets stabbed by Wormtongue at the top of the tower.
And then he falls.
And then I think Legolas puts an arrow through him, and then he like, falls from the top of the tower and gets impaled on...
It's basically OJ's death in the Naked Gun.
Yes, right. Yeah, basically that.
Yeah. Right. So
okay. Then he gets run over by a car.
My only concern is this, is like you're taking this novel and you're making it three films. That seems padded. Now, how do you then, when you're going to Blu-ray DVD, pad it even more
and extend it up?
Like, how are you going to extend the extension of the extension?
What they're going to do is they're going to interrupt the film and they're going to have these inserts of Richard, whatever his name is, the guy who runs Weta, talking really boringly about how they did the special effects. Instead of having that as extra material, they're just going to insert it right into the film. They're just
Like I say, I would be happy if, you know, the extended cut, like they just put in an extra hour of footage of, you know, two guys dressed as orcs talking to each other in Cockney accents. You know? It was one of my favorite things about the extended cuts of the first three was just like, oh, there's going to be more orc stuff. Yeah, a little more Mordor.
With that Orkney slang they've got.
Well, actually, my favorite extra material... My favorite extra material was the Riders of Rohan, where they're showing they're just a bunch of girls from Pony Club that they rounded together and put fake beards on them. I was thinking, like, you don't even see that in the film, though. Like, when you're watching it in the extra material, you're like, well, it's obvious they're, like, young girls. But then when you're watching the film, and I've seen it since I saw that extra material, I'm looking, trying to see them, you know, and they look like guys riding on horses. So it's interesting. The magic of CGI, I guess.
Well, maybe, let me just say, maybe we should meet back again next year and talk about the next Hobbit movie or whatever. We'll talk more Hobbit stuff.
I think there's three more years. We'll have to wait, though, isn't there?
No, we're going to, like, this.
One year?
What? The next one's coming out next year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're fine.
It's going to take 3 years to see.
Yeah, we'll meet every year.
A book, I could read the book 400 times.
We'll make this an annual tradition. Oh. It'll be fine.
It's only going to take 2 years and a couple of weeks.
Okay. There you go.
Okay.
Exactly.
We'll do that.
So we're going to start.
Right in your date book.
We are. We're writing in a date book. We've put it online. So now this is what's going to happen. Mark.
Sneaky Dragon dance card.
David, I'm trying to wrap up the show.
Sorry.
Mark. It's been a real treat having you here. One thing I didn't plug was I wrote some stuff that you acted in that's on the interweb right now. The Irrelevant Show just collected some of its superhero sketches together. So if you go on iTunes, Irrelevant Show, Superhero Show, Mark plays a Superman. Whenever I write a Superman sketch, Mark is your go-to guy to play.
He has the voice for it.
He is a damn good Superman. You know what? Visually, I would say Mark would be a fantastic Tony Stark. I'd say in the Marvel Universe, he's a Tony Stark.
Okay,
well,
but I'm gonna give you Superman in the DC.
My voice, I could play a killer Jimmy Olsen. No.
Okay, sure. Yeah, give you that.
I don't even get that.
No, it's absolutely fine.
I could play Ebony in the spirit.
But it's a real treat writing Superman sketches, knowing that you'll knock him out of the park. You're just doing
fantastic. Well, thank you,
sir.
I always look forward to seeing your superhero sketches at the table read.
And you've taken some of them down to Dragon Con, and you've done them with little puppets. As well.
Yes, in the Dragon Con Puppet Slams.
Yeah, those are fantastic.
Are very popular events. The first year, we had a room of about 300, and we turned about three times as many people away. And then this year, they gave us a room of 1,000, and we sold that one out, too.
Oh, wicked. P and I are going to try and make it to Dragon Con very shortly, because we've heard nothing but
good
things.
You should go to Dragon Con. Dragon Con is one of the best cons around.
This is what I've heard many a time, and I will indeed. Again, thank you so much, Mark. If you want to listen to Mark's voice, it's everywhere. It's on the everything and the whatever. We'll put up clips. Fuck it. You can't avoid this guy. But the one big thing, get yourself some Super Channel Tiny Plastic Men. That's and when does that actually start?
It has started already. It's on airing on Mondays.
Okay, it's already started. So it's too late. You won't catch up. Forget it.
There is Super Channel on demand. Just so get you can watch your watch our shows whenever you like.
Just get it on DVD the way Mark does. So don't watch it. Wait for the DVD, Mark style. If you really respect Mark, watch TV the way Mark does. DVD.
I only do that occasionally, but it has been with some series I really enjoy. Actually, Why the Last Man? As a matter of fact, I read that way, picking up the trades.
Okay.
Yeah, and Transmetropolitan as well. And although with Why, I basically caught up in the trades and then couldn't resist and had to start buying the monthly comic.
Cool.
Then buying the trades again afterwards so that I would have a complete collection of the trades.
We just got a royalty check, so thank you. You've made our Christmas.
Actually, there's one thing I would like to plug that's coming up this weekend.
Please, please.
In Toronto.
Do it.
I'm going to be appearing at Comedy Bar in a night of British Christmas specials, including Doctor Whom, which is an improvised parody of Doctor Who, and I will be playing the Doctor.
Nice.
Just saw the...
Which one?
Yeah, which Doctor are you playing?
I look closest. I have been told before that I have a strong resemblance to David Tennant, so I'm going to be playing 10.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see you doing a 10. I could also see you doing a Peter Davidson, but you'd have to blonde it up.
Right, yes. Would have to blonde it up and stick some celery to my lapel.
That's right. just saw the poster for that. It looked great.
Cool, excellent. And so, yeah, that's this weekend. And I'm also going to be appearing the same evening in their improvised version of Downton Abbey.
Oh, fuck. I have so much improv envy right now. This, God damn it. Okay, fine. All right, this has been... All right, I hate you and respect the hell out of you. And you're one of my favorite people. So, fantastic. Mark, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. Happy holidays.
Thank you, David, for being on the show, though you're contractually obligated.
Kind of integral part of it.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to the show. We could do it without you, but it would be weird. Thanks for listening to Sneaky Dragon. Check out all that stuff. You will be pleased. We've not mentioned anything that you will be bored by, so check all that stuff out. And thanks for listening to the show. This has been Sneaky Dragon. Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.